With my help, there will be no more resistance from the New World than that offered by Renwald. If Chigang should choose to be unreasonable, well, who knows? With a real prophet on the side of the New World, they might even win. Sister Jodel studied Nathan's eyes. Yes, I see what you mean. Nathan held out his letter. Here, give this to Chigang. It explains my proposal and terms in return for my surrender of the New World. As I said, I'm sure he will find me much more reasonable than the present Lord Rawl. I know that there is no profit in war. One leader or another, it means little. Why should hundreds of thousands of people die over the name put to that leader? Both sisters glanced around the luxurious room and smiled conspiratorially at Nathan.
Why, you crafty old man, Sister Jodel said.
And here, all this time we thought you were just an old fool, living out your life down in your apartments. Well, Lord Rawl, we will pass your words along to Emperor Chigang. I think he will find them most interesting. Had the present Lord Rawl been so reasonable, he wouldn't be in his present fatal difficulties. All those years do give a man time to think. Sister Jodel turned back from the door. I can't speak for the Emperor, Lord Rawl, but I think he will be most pleased with this news. I think we can dare to see the end to this war, and the victory that will result in Chigang being the name put to the leader of all people.
I just want the killing to stop.
It would profit us all, sister. Oh, and tell Chigang that I am sorry about Vincent, but the boy really wasn't serving him well anyway.
Sister Jodel shrugged.
You're right, Lord Rawl. He wasn't.
Chapter 50 Richard ran his fingers through his hair as he rested his forehead in his palms. He looked up when he heard someone enter the room. It was Colin. His heart lifted at her smile, her bright green eyes, the lush fall of her thick hair, at how beautiful she was. He marveled at her beauty, and that she loved him. The safety he felt in that love was something he had never imagined he would feel. He had always imagined being in love with someone, but he had never imagined the feeling of security and peace it would bring to his soul. If Shota ever did anything to harm that security.
Colin carried a steaming bowl of soup. I thought you might like something to eat. You've been at this for a hand of days now. I think you need to get more sleep, too.
He glanced at the big white bowl in her hands.
Thanks. Her brow wrinkled. Richard, what's wrong? Your face is white as ashes.
He leaned back in his chair and sighed.
I feel a little sick.
She turned white as ashes, too.
Sick? Richard, it isn't...
No, it's not that. It's this book on the Temple of the Winds Inquisition and Trial. I almost wish I'd never found it.
Colin leaned over as she set down the bowl. Here, eat some of this.
What is it? Richard asked, as he watched the lush curve of her cleavage rise and fall above the square neckline of her white confessor's dress.
Lentil porridge. Eat some. What have you found out?
Richard sucked in through his mouth to cool the spoonful of porridge. I haven't translated much yet. It's taking forever. But from just the little bit I've been able to figure out, these people, these wizards, they executed all the wizards who sent away the Temple of the Winds. The Temple Team, they called them. Almost 100 men. He pulled a finger across his throat.
Colin sat on the edge of the table opposite him. What did they do to warrant death?
Richard stirred the porridge. Well, for one thing, they left a way into the Temple of the Winds, as they were directed to do, but they made it so hard to get back into the temple that when these people wanted to get back in to retrieve some magic in order to fight the war, they couldn't.
Kolo said that there were the red moons, that the temple sent the warning. You mean the wizards of old were never able to answer the warning?
That wasn't the way it worked. They did get back in. He waved his spoon for emphasis. In fact, that was the reason for the red moon. It was the second attempt to get in, to answer the red moons caused by the first person sent, that they failed at.
Colin leaned toward him while Richard ate a spoonful of porridge. But this first person got in?
Oh, yes, he got in. And that was the problem.
Colin shook her head. I'm not following this.
Richard set down his spoon and leaned back in his chair. He met her gaze. The temple team, who sent away the Temple of the Winds, were also the ones who placed the magic in it. You know about some of the terrible magical creations that were made in the war? Things made out of people like the Mriswith, like the Dreamwalkers? Well, the people of the New World were fighting the people of the Old World, who wanted to eliminate magic, much as Chagang does today. These wizards who took the things of power to the safety of the temple were somewhat in sympathy with those in the Old World who wanted to eliminate magic. They thought that using people to create these terrible weapons was as evil as some of the very things they fought against.
Fascinated, Colin leaned toward him. You mean they turned to the side of the enemy? They were really working for those in the Old World to eliminate magic?
No, they weren't working to defeat the New World or to stop all magic, but they felt that they viewed the whole matter on a wider scope than just the war, unlike the wizards in charge here at the keep. They sought the middle ground. They decided that, to an extent, the war and all their troubles were related to the misuse of magic. They decided that something had to be done.
Colin hooked some hair behind her ear. Done? Like what?
You know the way the keep used to be full of wizards? The way wizards used to have both sides of the magic? The way the wizards of old wielded much more power than even Zed does now as first wizard? The way those born with the gift are more and more rare all the time? I think these wizards used the Temple of the Winds to withdraw some of magic's power from this world. They locked it away in the underworld, where it couldn't be used to cause harm, as they saw it, in this world.
Colin put a hand to her chest. Dear spirits, what gave them the right to decide this? They are not the creator who gave all things, including magic.
Richard smiled. The head of the Inquisition said much the same thing. He demanded to know exactly what they had done.
And have you found the answer?
I haven't translated much yet, and I don't understand the way the magic worked, but I think that what the temple team did was to lock away the subtractive portion of the wizard's magic. It's the subtractive part that was used to turn people into these weapons. With it, they took away parts of who these people were, the parts these wizards didn't want, and then with additive magic, the wizards added in the things they did want, so they could use these people as weapons.
What about you? You were born with both sides. If the power was locked away, how does that explain your gift? I, too, have an element of subtractive magic to my confessor's power. Darkin Rawl used subtractive magic, as do some of the sisters. There are creatures yet today who have some of this element to their magic.
Richard wiped a weary hand across his face. I don't know. I'm not even positive about what I've told you. There's still most of this book to translate. I've only just begun. Even when I translate it all, I'm not sure it will provide the answers we want. This was an inquisition and trial. They weren't trying to teach me history. It was common knowledge at the time. They didn't need to explain it. What I'm beginning to think the temple team did was to halt subtractive magic's ability to be passed on to the offspring of wizards. Your magic isn't passed on from a wizard, so perhaps that's why it wasn't affected. Darkin Rawl learned to use subtractive magic. He wasn't born with it. Therein, perhaps, lies the difference. Maybe they miscalculated how taking subtractive magic out of those born with the wizard's gift would affect the balance, and so didn't anticipate the way it would cause fewer and fewer to be born with the gift. Maybe they did know. Maybe that's what they wanted. Maybe that's why they were executed.
What about the red moons?
Well, when those in charge found all this out, they sent someone to undo what these wizards had done. They needed one with tremendous power and conviction, hoping he would have enough strength to succeed. They sent the most zealous proponent of magic among them, a fanatic, the head prosecutor, a powerful wizard named Lothain, to the Temple of the Winds to undo the damage.
Colin drew her lower lip between her teeth. What happened?
He got in, through Betrayer's Hall, just like you told me. It worked just as you said. Lothain entered, but in so doing, he betrayed them. I'm not sure what it was that he did. Many of the words, I think, have to do with specific magic that I don't understand. But from what I gather, he reinforced what the wizards who sent the temple away had done, and made it even worse. He betrayed those in the New World. Because he had to alter the way the Temple of the Winds held his magic, it set off the warnings of the Red Moons. When the temple sent the Red Moons and the call for aid, a wizard was sent. Because the temple was sending for help, the wizards were glad for the call, since it meant that they wouldn't have to enter through Betrayer's Hall. They thought they would be able to get in and at last remedy the problem. He never came back. They sent another, more powerful and experienced wizard. He never returned either. Finally, in view of the seriousness of the situation, the first wizard himself went to the Temple of the Winds. Richard lifted the amulet at his chest. Baracus.
Baracus.
Colin breathed in wonder.
Did he get into the temple?
They were never sure. Richard pushed his thumb back and forth along the edge of the table. Baracus came back in a dazed stupor. They followed after him, but he didn't react or respond to anything they said or did. He went into the first wizard's enclave, his retreat, and left this there. Richard held up the amulet at his chest, showing it to her. He came out, removed the rest of his outfit, these things I wear, and then walked to the edge of the rampart and jumped off the side of the mountain to his death. Colin sat back up straight while Richard cleared his throat and gathered his voice before going on. After that, the wizards abandoned any further attempt to get into the Temple of the Winds, to answer the call of the Red Moons, as impossible. They were never able to get in to undo the damage the temple team and then Lothane had done. Colin watched him with a sober look as he stared off at nothing.
How did they know all this?
Richard's fist tightened around the amulet at his chest. They used a confessor, Magda Cirrus, the first Mother Confessor herself.
She lived in that time? She was there, in this war? I never knew that.
Richard rubbed his fingertips across the furrows on his brow. Lothane wouldn't tell them what he had done. The wizards conducting the trial were the ones who ordered the creation of the confessors. Magda Cirrus was the first. They knew that they wouldn't be able to torture the truth out of Lothane. They tried. So they took this woman, Magda Cirrus, created the magic of the confessors and instilled the power in her. She touched Lothane with her power and got the truth out of him. He confessed the extent of what the temple team had done and what he had done. Richard looked away from her green eyes. The wizard who did this to Magda Cirrus, created the confessor's power, was named Merit. The tribunal was so pleased with the results of Merit's conjuring that they commanded an order of confessors to be created and wizards assigned to safeguard them. Merit became protector to Magda Cirrus, her wizard, in return for the life, the duty to which he had condemned her, to which he had condemned all the descendants of confessors to follow. The room fell silent. Colin was wearing her confessor's face, a blank expression that showed nothing of her feelings. He didn't need to see an expression on her face to know her feelings. Richard pulled the porridge back and ate some more. It had cooled considerably.
Richard,
Colin finally whispered,
if these wizards, with all that power, with all that knowledge, if even they couldn't get into the Temple of the Winds after it sent its warning with the Red Moons, then...
Her voice trailed off. Richard put words to the rest of it. Then how can I hope to? Richard ate lentil porridge as the uncomfortable silence dragged on.
Richard,
Colin said in a quiet voice,
if we don't get into the temple, then what the spirit showed me will come to pass. Death will sweep the land. Untold numbers of people will die.
Richard nearly leaped to his feet and screamed at her that he knew that. Nearly screamed, asking what she expected him to do. Instead, he swallowed back the screams along with the porridge.
I know,
he whispered. He went back to eating his porridge in silence. When he had finished and was sure he had composed himself, he went on. One of the temple team, a wizard named Ricker, made a statement before they executed him. Richard pulled the piece of paper with the translation out of the disorderly stack and read it to her. I can no longer countenance what we do with our gift. We are not the creator, nor are we the keeper. Even a vexatious prostitute has the right to live her life.
What was he talking about?
Colin asked. I think that when the wizards used people, destroyed them, to create the things they needed to fight the war, I think they used people who were troublesome for one reason or another, people they didn't mind destroying. I've heard it said that a wizard must use people. I doubt they knew the ghastly origin of the maxim. He saw dismay haunting her eyes.
Richard, do you think then, from what you've read, that it's hopeless? Do you think we can do nothing then?
Richard didn't know what to say. He reached over and clasped her hand. The temple team, before they were executed, said in their own defense that they hadn't sealed the temple away for good, as they might have easily done, but instead left a way in to answer the call. They said that if the need was truly great enough, it could still be entered.
I will get in, Colin. I swear it.
A small measure of relief came briefly to her beautiful eyes, but the haunted look settled back into them. Richard knew what she was thinking. It was the same as he'd wondered himself as he read of the madness that was the war and of what people had done to each other. Colin, we don't use magic to destroy people for our own purposes. We use it to fight against a cause that murders helpless children. We fight for freedom from terror and killing.
A small smile returned as she squeezed his hand. They both looked up when they heard a knock on the open door. It was Drefin.
Can I come in? I'm not interrupting anything, am I?
No, it's all right, Richard said. Come in.
I just wanted you to know that I ordered the carts like you wanted. It's gotten to that point.
Richard rubbed his fingertips across his forehead.
How many?
A little over 300 last night, if the reports are all in. As you suspected might be the case, the people can't handle that many dead anymore, and the numbers grow each day.
Richard nodded.
We can't let the dead wait. It could spread the plague even faster to have them rotting in the open air. They have to be buried as soon as they die. Tell the men I want the dead carts sent out just as soon as they have it organized. I give them until sunset.
I already told them. As you say, we can't allow bodies infected with the plague to go untended. It could make the plague worse.
It can get worse, Richard mocked.
Drefin didn't answer.
I'm sorry, Richard said. That wasn't called for. Have you found anything that is of any use?
Drefin tugged down the sleeves of his white shirt. Richard, there is no cure for the plague. At least I know of none. The only hope is to stay healthy. Speaking of which, it isn't healthy to sit in here all day and most of the night. You aren't getting enough sleep, again. I can see it in your eyes. I've warned you about that before, and you need to walk around, get some air.
Richard was sick of trying to translate the book, and sick of the things he found out when he succeeded. He flipped it closed and pushed back his chair.
This is doing no good anyway. Let's go for that walk you suggested.
Richard yawned as he stretched.
And what have you been doing to keep busy?
He asked Callan.
While I've been shut up in this stuffy room.
Callan cast a furtive glance at Drefin. I have been helping Drefin and Nadine.
Helping them? Helping them do what?
Drefin smoothed the ruffles on the front of his shirt. Callan has been helping with the staff. Some of them are ill.
Richard looked from Colin's eyes to Drefin's.
The plague is in the palace?
I'm afraid so. 16 of them have come down sick. A few are common illnesses. The rest...
Richard heaved a weary sigh.
I see.
Raina was standing guard outside his room. She straightened when Richard came through the door.
Raina, we're going for a walk. I suppose you'd better come along or I'll never hear the end of it from Kara.
Raina smiled as she brushed back a wisp of dark hair. She knew he was right, and was obviously glad he was cooperating.
Lord Rall, Raina said, I didn't want to disturb you while you were working, but the captain of the city guard came by with a report.
I know, I heard. 300 people died last night.
Raina's leather creaked as she shifted her weight.
That, too. But they wanted me to tell you they found another woman last night. She was cut up like the other four.
Richard closed his eyes as he wiped a hand across his mouth. He noticed that he hadn't remembered to shave that day.
Dear spirits, don't we have enough people dying without some madman going around killing more of them?
Was this one a prostitute like the others? Drefin asked. The captain said he wasn't positive, but he was pretty sure she was.
Drefin shook his head with disgust.
You'd think he'd be worried about the plague, if not getting caught. The plague is running wild among the prostitutes, more so than the populace at large.
Richard caught sight of Berdine coming up the hall.
As much as I'd like to do something about it, we have bigger worries.
He turned to Raina.
When we get back, tell the captain that I want his men to spread the word among those women that there's a killer among them, and that for their own safety we hope they will cease their profession, at least for the time being.
I'm sure the soldiers will know where to find all the prostitutes, he added under his breath.
Have them get the word out at once. If these women don't stop selling their bodies, they're likely to find themselves in the company of the wrong customer, their last customer.
Richard waited until Berdine reached them.
Aren't you supposed to be up in the keep, taking your turn, guarding the sliff? Richard asked her.
Berdine shrugged. I went up there to relieve Kara, but she said she wanted to stay for another watch. Richard raked back his hair.
Why would she want to do that?
Berdine shrugged again. She didn't say. Colin took his arm. I think it's the rats.
What?
I think she's trying to prove something to herself. Colin hesitated. Kara doesn't like rats.
I don't blame her, Raina muttered.
Filthy creatures, Jeffin put in.
I don't blame her either.
If any of you tease her about it, Colin warned, you will answer to me when Kara's done with you. It's not funny.
No one looked in the mood to challenge Colin, nor were any of them in a mood to see anything as funny.
Where are you going? Berdine asked.
We're going for a walk, Richard said. You've probably been sitting as much as I have. If you'd like, come along.
Nadine came around the corner and caught sight of them just as they started out.
What's going on?
Nothing, Richard said.
How are you doing, Nadine?
Nadine smiled.
Fine, thank you. I've been busy smoking sick rooms, as Jeffin asked.
We were just going out for a walk, Colin said. You've been working hard, Nadine. Why don't you come along with us? Richard frowned at Colin. She didn't look back at him. Nadine studied Colin's eyes for a moment.
Sure, I'd like that.
The six of them made their way through the marble halls, past imposing tapestries and elegant furniture, and across sumptuous carpets on their way toward the main palace gates. Soldiers on patrol bowed or clapped fists over heart as the six of them passed. The staff Richard saw going about their business seemed to be in a state of shock. He saw people weeping as they hurried about their tasks. Before they made the door, they encountered Tristan Bashkar. Richard was in no mood to speak with the Jarian ambassador. Tristan sauntered to a halt before them. There would be no avoiding him this time. Tristan bowed his head.
Mother Confessor, Lord Rawl, I'm glad I ran into you.
What do you want, Tristan? Colin asked in a level tone. He watched her cleavage as she spoke. His gaze moved to Richard.
I want to know...
Richard cut him off.
Did you come to offer Jara surrender?
Tristan pulled his coat back and rested his fist on his hip.
The time I was allotted is not yet expired. I'm concerned about this plague. You're Lord Rawl. You're supposed to be running everything now. I want to know what you're going to do about the plague.
Richard restrained himself.
What we can.
Tristan glanced to Colin's chest again.
Well, I'm sure that you can understand that I need assurance.
His gaze returned to Richard. A sly smile spread on his face.
After all, how can I, in good conscience, surrender my land to a man overseeing what may prove to be the greatest cataclysm in the history of the Midlands? No offense intended. The skies speak the truth to me. I'm sure you can understand my position.
Richard leaned toward the pompous ambassador.
You are rapidly running out of time, ambassador. You had better be prepared to surrender Jara soon, or I will see to it, my way. Now, if you'll excuse us, we're going to get some fresh air. It suddenly stinks in here.
Tristan Bashkar's expression darkened. When his eyes turned toward Colin again, Richard yanked the knife from Tristan's belt scabbard before he could so much as blink. Everyone froze. Richard pressed the point to the man's chest.
And if I ever catch your lecherous eyes anywhere on Colin but her face, I'll cut out your heart.
Richard turned and loosed the knife, burying it in a round oak ball atop a nearby newel. The twang echoed through the marble halls. Without waiting for a response, he took Colin by the arm and marched away, his gold cloak billowing out behind. Colin's face was red. The two moored Sith followed, grinning broadly. Dreffen smiled, too, as he followed after. Nadine showed no reaction. Chapter 51. In the distance, a dog barked as Richard led them up the cobbled alley. He brought his escorts to a halt outside the small yard behind the Anderson family's home. The yard was still cluttered with cut-offs, wood scraps, shavings, stickered lumber, and the two carving benches. Richard heard neither the sound of wood being worked nor voices. He swung open the gate and made his way through the clutter. The workshop remained silent. A knock produced no response. Richard pushed open one of the double doors and called out. There was no reply.
"Clive!" Richard called again. "Darby! Erling, is anyone home?"
Old chairs and templates still hung from pegs on the dusty walls, and the cobwebs still hung in all the corners. Upstairs, instead of the aroma of meat pies and boiling turnips, like the last time Richard had been to the Anderson home, there was the heavy stench of death. In one of the chairs he had made sat Clive Anderson. He was dead. In his arms, he was holding the stiff corpse of his wife. Richard stood, stunned at the sight. Behind, he heard Colin let out a mournful cry. Dreffen went to the bedrooms. After a brief look, he returned and shook his head. Richard stood staring at the dead husband and wife. He tried to imagine Clive's misery as he sat there, sick with the plague, holding his dead wife in his arms, his dreams and hopes dead in his arms. Dreffen eased a hand under Richard's arm and pulled him away. "Richard, there's nothing to be done. We'd best go and have a dead cart sent." Colin pressed her face against his shoulder as she wept. He saw the stricken look on the faces of Berdine and Raina. He saw their fingers find one another and curl together, a furtive, comforting touch. Nadine glanced away from the rest of them. Richard felt sudden sorrow for her. She was alone among them. Thankfully, Dreffen rested a comforting hand on her shoulder. The room droned with painful silence. Richard held Colin to him as they went down the stairs. The others followed behind. When they reached the workshop, he took a breath at last. The stench upstairs had nearly gagged him. Just then, Erling, the grandfather, walked through the door. He started at seeing the six people standing in his workshop.
"I'm sorry, Erling," Richard said. "We didn't mean to invade your home. We came to check. We came..."
Erling nodded distantly.
"My boy's dead. Atti, too. I had to go out. I couldn't carry them by myself."
"We'll have a cart sent right away. There are some soldiers on the next street over. I'll send them right away to help you." Erling nodded again.
"That will be kind of you."
"The rest of them? Are they?" Erling's bloodshot eyes turned up.
"My wife, daughter, son, his wife, Darby, and little Lily, all dead."
His mouth worked as his eyes watered up.
"Beth, she recovered. Got well again, she did. I couldn't care for her. I just now took her to Addie's sister. So far, their home is still sound."
Richard laid a hand gently on Erling's arm.
"I'm so sorry. Dear spirits, I'm so sorry."
Erling nodded.
"Thank you."
He cleared his throat.
"Long as I've lived, you'd think it would be me, not the young ones. The spirits weren't fair in this. Not fair at all."
"I know," Richard said. "They're at a place of peace now. We all go there sooner or later. They'll be with you again."
Out in the alley, after they had made sure that Erling didn't need anything, they all paused to gather their wits.
"Raina," Richard said, "please run over to the next street where we saw those soldiers. Get them over here right now. Tell them to get those bodies out of there for Erling."
"Of course,"
she said, before dashing away. Her dark braid flew behind as she ran.
"I don't know what to do," Richard whispered. "What do you do for someone who has just lost his whole family, everyone he loved? I felt a fool. I didn't know what to say."
Dreffen squeezed Richard's shoulder. "You said the right things, Richard. You did."
"He took comfort in your words, Richard,"
Nadine said.
That was all you could do.
All I can do, Richard repeated as he stared off. Colin squeezed his hand. Verdine's hand touched his. He gripped it. The three of them stood linked in shared sorrow. Richard paced as he waited for Raina to return. The sun was almost down. It would be dark before they got back to the palace. The least he could do was wait until Erling had help getting his dead son and daughter-in-law out of the house. Colin and Verdine stood close together, leaning against the wall beside the Andersons' yard. Drefn, hands clasped behind his back, looking to be lost in thought, strolled a ways back down the alley. Nadine went to the other side of the alley, alone, and leaned against the clapboard wall. Richard paced as he thought about the Temple of the Winds and the magic stolen by Jagang's order. Richard could think of no way to stop this slaughter. When he thought about Tristan Bashkar's eyes on Colin, Richard's blood boiled. Richard paused. His head came up. Nadine was behind him. He had the oddest sensation. The hair on the back of his neck stiffened. Richard heard the air whine as he spun. The world slowed. Sound dragged. He floated as he moved. The air felt as thick as mud. Everyone seemed a statue in his vision. Time was his. His arms stretched out as he drifted ahead. He commanded the thickness of the air. In the eerie silence, he could hear the feathers singing. He could hear the hiss of blade. Time was his. Nadine's startled blink took forever. He closed his fist. With a slam of sound, the world crashed back with a wild rush. In his fist, Richard held a bolt from a crossbow. The blade wasn't 3 inches from Nadine's wide eyes. A fraction of a second more, and it would have killed her. That fraction of a second had been an hour to him.
"Richard," Nadine panted, "how did you catch that arrow? I hope you can understand that it gives me the creeps. Not that I'm complaining," she was quick to add.
Drefn was there, his jaw hanging open.
"How did you do that?" he whispered.
"I'm a wizard, remember?" Richard said as he turned, looking in the direction from which the arrow had come. He thought he saw movement. Colin clutched a trembling Nadine.
"Are you all right?"
Nadine nodded and let out a belated, frightened cry as Colin pulled her into a reassuring embrace. Richard's eyes locked on a movement as his fist snapped the arrow in half. He took off running. Verdine raced after him. Richard turned as he ran.
"Find some soldiers. I want this whole area closed off. I want him caught."
Verdine cut down a street, going after soldiers. Richard ran like the wind on a storm. Rage inundated him. Someone had tried to kill Nadine. In that instant, Nadine wasn't a woman sent by Shota to marry him, a woman who was causing him trouble. In that instant, she was simply an old friend from home. The full fury of the magic took him. Buildings flashed by, dogs barked as he raced past. People in the alley cried out and dived for safety. A woman screamed as she cowered against a small, crooked storage building. Richard vaulted the low, board fence where he had seen the movement. In mid-leap, he drew his sword. The air rang with the unique sound of steel. He rolled as he landed, coming to his feet with the sword in both hands. He found himself face to face with a white goat. There was no man there. A crossbow lay on the ground between the board fence and a squat goat shed. Richard looked around in all directions. Sheets and shirts hung from lines. A woman, her hair wrapped in a blue scarf, stood on a balcony beyond the flapping laundry. Richard slid his sword back into its scabbard and cupped his hands around his mouth.
"Did you see a man here?"
he yelled at the woman. She lifted her arm, pointing off to her right.
"I saw someone running that way,"
she called from the distance. Richard dashed off in the direction the woman had pointed. The alley narrowed. Beyond the tunnel of buildings, the passageway opened onto a street. He looked both ways. He seized the arm of a young woman. "A man came through here. Which way did he go?" In fright, she tried to pull away, at the same time holding her hat on with her other hand.
"There be people all about. Which man?"
Richard released her arm. Up the street to his left, he saw a man riding an overturned handcart full of fresh greens. The man looked up when Richard skidded to a panting halt beside him.
"What did he look like? The man who ran through here, what did he look like?"
The man straightened his broad-brimmed hat.
"Dunno," he pointed. "I was looking for a good spot. I heard the sound as my cart fell over. I saw a dark shape
running up that way.
Richard ran on. The ancient part of the city branched into a warren of alleys, streets, and twisting passageways. Only by keeping track of the golden glow in the western sky could he keep his bearings. That didn't mean, though, that the man he chased had run in a specific direction. He was probably just running, trying to get away. Richard came across a patrol of a dozen soldiers. Before they had time to salute, he was talking. A man came running through here somewhere. Did any of you see him?
We saw no one running. What did he look like?
I don't know. He attacked us with a crossbow and then ran. I want him found. Spread out and start searching. Before they could be on their way, Raina came running up the street with a good 50 men.
Did you see where he went?
She asked, gasping for breath.
No, I lost him in here somewhere. I want all of you to spread out and find him.
One of the soldiers, a sergeant, spoke up.
Lord Brawl, a man who wants to escape would make himself obvious by running. A man with any sense at all would simply round a corner and walk away.
The sergeant gestured back up the street to make his point. There were people everywhere going about their business, although a good many were staring at the excitement on their street. Any number of them could have been the man he was chasing.
Any idea at all what this assassin looks like?
Richard shook his head in frustration.
I never got a look at him.
He raked back his hair as he caught his breath.
Split up. Half of you go back in the direction we came from. Question everyone you can find to see if anyone got a look at him, at a man running. He may be walking now, but until he got somewhere along in here, he was running.
Raina, a geel in hand, took up her defensive position close beside him.
The rest of you come with me, Richard said. We'll pick up some more men. I want to keep searching. Maybe we'll come across someone walking and he'll panic and try to run again. If he does, I want him alive.
It was late in the night by the time they returned to the confessor's palace. Soldiers there were already on high alert. Men stood with swords and battle axes to hand, arrows knocked and spears leveled. Others patrolled the expansive grounds. A mouse wouldn't have escaped their intense scrutiny. As Colin, Berdine, Raina, Dreffen, and Nadine accompanied him into the gathering hall inside, Richard saw Tristan Bashkar waiting there, hands clasped behind his back as he paced. He halted and looked up when he heard them coming. Richard drifted to a stop as the contrite-looking ambassador approached. Those escorting Richard gathered in a knot behind him, except Colin, who stood close at his side. With a hand in the air, Tristan hailed them.
Lord Rawl, may I have a word with you, please?
Richard swept his gaze over the man, noticing that he didn't rest his hand on a hip so as to show off his fancy knife. Richard held up a finger.
One moment, please.
Richard turned a little to the rest of them.
It's late. We have a lot of work to do, so I want you to get some rest. Berdine, I want you to go up to the keep and stand guard with Kara tonight.
Berdine frowned.
Both of us?
Richard scowled.
Isn't that what I said? Yes, both of you. With this trouble, I don't want to take any chances.
I will guard the Mother Confessor's room, then, Raina said.
No.
Richard lifted a thumb. I want you guarding Nadine's room. She was the one who was attacked.
Yes, Lord Rawl,
Raina stammered.
I'll see to setting up a guard of soldiers outside the Mother Confessor's room, then.
If I wanted soldiers around Colin's room, I'd have told you so now, wouldn't I?
Raina's face reddened.
I want all the soldiers doing their jobs, patrolling the entrances, the palace grounds, and a perimeter around the grounds, every one of them. The danger is from out there, not in here.
Colin is perfectly safe inside the palace. I don't want men who should be guarding outside, instead sitting on their bottoms around Colin's room inside.
I'll not have it. Do you hear me?
But, Lord Rawl,
don't question me. I'm not in the mood.
Colin touched his arm.
Richard,
she whispered. Are you sure that...
Someone tried to kill Nadine. They nearly succeeded. Or did some of you miss the significance of that? I'll not take any more chances. I want her protected, and I don't want to hear any more arguments. Dreffen, I want you to start carrying a sword at once. Healers are a target.
Everyone stared at the floor in silence.
Good.
Richard turned his glare on Tristan.
What is it?
Tristan spread his hands. Lord Rawl, I just wanted to say that I'm sorry. I realize I seemed insensitive, but I've been worried about the people here who are sick and dying. It set my nerves on edge.
I meant to cause no ill will between us. I hope you will accept my apology.
Richard studied Tristan's eyes.
Yes, of course. Apology accepted, and I'm sorry that I lost my temper. I, too, have been out of sorts.
Richard put a hand on Nadine's shoulder.
Someone tried to kill one of my healers, a person devoted to helping others. People are beginning to blame healers because the plague continues to spread. I can't allow harm to come to people who are only trying their best to help.
Yes, of course. You are most kind to accept my apology. Thank you, Lord Raw.
Just don't forget, Ambassador, that your time runs out tomorrow.
Tristan bowed.
I realize that, and you will know my stand by tomorrow, Lord Rawl. You have my word. Good night, then.
Richard rounded on the rest of them.
We have a lot of work to do tomorrow. It's very late, as Dreffen is constantly reminding me we need to get some sleep. You all have your orders. Any questions?
Each answered with a silent shake of the head.
2 hours after they had returned to the palace and Richard had sent them all to bed, Colin thought she saw something move in her room. The lamp on the far wall was turned down low. The clouds hid the moon, so there was no light coming in the glassed doors to the balcony. The thick carpets silenced the sound of footsteps, if there were any. The weak flame from the lamp was all that betrayed the shape she thought she saw.
This is the end of Side 1. There is no need to change your balance control. Simply reverse this cassette. That is, turn to Side 2 and continue listening.